This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, let's talk Seahawks draft and the rest of the NFL with Greg Rosenthal of NFL Network and NFL.com. Greg, how's it going?
It is going well. I feel like I haven't had enough Seahawks talk. They're a little off the radar this offseason.
I know, which, you know, look, last year it was all Geno, and you were Camp Geno, give him a chance, and so we had plenty of conversations about that, and it was all good stuff. And this year it's, you know, Michael Penix getting drafted to the Falcons. It's the Bears with Caleb Williams, and lo and behold, Seattle taking a back seat. But they did address the trenches, which was their most important need. What did you make of them taking Byron Murphy and then an offensive lineman in the third round, really looking to shore up either side of the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, those both made sense. And I think the fact they're off the radar, it's just been a relatively quiet offseason for them. They brought back most of their guys and not a ton of big acquisitions. I know Byron Murphy being the number two defensive player on their entire draft board, or maybe number one if they had him over Latu, is a great place to be when you're Mike McDonald and you really need a penetrating defensive tackle. That is partly what his defense is all about. So I think it's a perfect fit for them, and they have to feel good about building through the lines. That's what he wants to do. But this is probably a vision of the team under him and Snyder that we're not going to get a full picture of for a couple of years.
What's the what do you think the potential is with Byron Murphy? You hear a lot of comparisons, and people go straight to Aaron Donald when it comes to interior defensive linemen. I don't think it's fair to put that pressure on that young man, but he also brings a lot to the table. He's stocky, he's strong, quick hands, can shoot the gaps. I mean, he does everything you want a D-tackle to do. What do you think the potential is with this young man?
Yeah, I mean, he's more of a penetrator, and I know Aaron Donald does that too, but when I think Aaron Donald, I think play strength first of all, and I'm not sure Byron Murphy is going to be that guy off the bat. I mean, to me, you have a Leonard Williams type. I know it's a different position, but that is going to be able to hold up a little stronger. Murphy is going to explode and make plays, and defensive tackles sometimes take a little bit to get going, not always, but sometimes take a little bit to get going. So I think be patient with him, because if you see some of the defensive tackles out there that have gotten these huge contracts, they're now getting paid like superstar edge players, like superstar wide receivers. And almost all of them, if you go through them, had a slow build. Like, they were solid as rookies. Even Aaron Donald, like, he wasn't quite Aaron Donald as a rookie, and then got better and better and better. A guy like Chris Jones, like Dexter Lawrence, different types of players, certainly, than Murphy. But I think he's a guy you'll see in the backfield and really helping on passing downs.
You had a take on Michael Penix to the Falcons that I hadn't heard yet. You talked about it on Around the NFL. You wrote about it for NFL.com's debrief, your 32 thoughts for 32 teams, and I just read about it the other morning. Here we've been following Michael Penix. Obviously, he's a Washington product, and everyone was rooting for him. I think everyone locally, Greg, was happy to see him go in the top 10. But there were some people that were just as surprised to see him go to the Falcons, who had just paid Kirk Cousins. What was your take on the selection of Michael Penix?
Yeah, I tried to focus more on the process, which is strange. I understand they just gave Kirk Cousins all this money. But to me, I've always thought you almost can't invest in the quarterback position too much, and that teams that have done that over the years have been rewarded. This is the most extreme example of it. But when you look at Cousins, he essentially got the Daniel Jones contract with inflation for the salary cap. He got the Geno Smith contract, but a little more. That's actually not at the level of starting quarterback that I think that you would want to avoid, like, looking for the next guy. And so to me, I don't think it's that crazy to invest that much in the quarterback position, because the payoff is just that huge. And this is a quarterback in Cousins that's a 36-year-old, you know, coming off an Achilles. And you might say, well, why'd you give him all that money then? I go back to, like, they didn't have a quarterback. It's a huge upgrade. Right. And so continuing to upgrade at that position, to me, makes sense.
There were rumors going around that Kansas City made a few phone calls to the Seahawks. asking about DK. Is he on the market? Is there a trade out there that could be worked out? What do you think an offer would look like from the Kansas City Chiefs when trying to acquire a talent like DK Metcalf?
My guess is, their first round pick, and that's gone now. So there's going to be a lot of talk about trades post-draft, especially with some of these reports coming out of what maybe teams were looking for. I don't see why players like DK Metcalf would get traded post-draft. Like, that ship has sailed. What are you going to trade him for, picks for next year's draft? Like, that doesn't help you right now. Like, that, it's not worth making those trades now. If you want to make that trade, make it during the season or make it next offseason. It's the same draft pick. So I'm sure if that was true, it would have involved their first-round pick, and now they've used it on a receiver, and to me, that ship has sailed.
I'm glad that you mentioned how would that help you right now, because DK can help the Seahawks win in 2024. And while I think, Greg, the majority of Seahawks fans are like, let's win every year, that's amazing, there are some fans that looked at the departure of Pete Carroll, a brand new 36-year-old head coach, moving on from a couple pieces, and thought, are we in a rebuild? And I don't think they are. I also think they have the pieces to be competitive this year. Do you?
I do. I mean, I don't see why they're any worse than they were a year ago. You know, I like the fresh eyes on the defense and what Mike McDonald's going to bring. They actually have more continuity offensively than most teams out there, and that usually leads to success. I'm excited to see what Ryan Grubbs can do as a coordinator. And I also kind of push back into, like, oh, are we going into a rebuild? Like, this isn't the NBA or Major League Baseball. Like, what are rebuilds in the NFL? You can bottom out. It's usually by mistake. You don't want to be in a rebuild. And if you're in one, it better only last like a year or two. I just sort of don't believe in the idea of a rebuild. Of course, you always want to be getting young players and building your youth. That's the core of your team. But every team is trying to do that. And you're playing within a salary cap structure. But DK Metcalf, to me, is a guy you want on their roster for a long, long time. Tyler Lockett is a much more likely guy to leave. But again, I don't see why that would happen or that they would get that much for him, unless that's like an in-season trade where you're struggling as a team. That's the only time I think that would really come up.
Obviously, the draft is over, and what we do naturally is try to rank teams, right? Who did get in the draft? Who didn't do so well? Who stands out to you as an organization that you felt really nailed this draft, and who do you feel like missed in a few spots?
I like Washington's draft, certainly. Like, I like Drake May better than Jaden Daniels, but you got your quarterback, and Johnny Newton was a guy I really liked in the second round. Sanders Hill. So their first three guys, I think, are going to contribute, and they had a lot of picks. So both them and the Cardinals both had so many day two and picks that they had built up. You have guys that are going to have an opportunity to play right away. I like what the Steelers did along their offensive line. If I'm looking at teams I didn't quite understand, like, the Panthers seem to be making the same mistakes over and over, which is they trade up for a guy who to me is not like a polished route runner in Xavier Leggett. They trade up for a running back, and I don't know, man. I don't see the long-term vision with what the Panthers are doing.
Do you think that's because the allegations that David Tepper are way too involved are still happening, that, like, he's maybe still overlooking things? I mean, I know that we talked about the restaurant being like, you know, let the GM and head coach draft, and then he, you know, walked in and was on camera. And, of course, so then there's this interesting angle for me of, like, well, was he still heavily involved?
Right. That's been the reporting. We don't know how that's changed or if that's changed under the new structure. But the new structure, notably, has a GM in Dan Morgan, who is an ex-Panthers player. Was he on the Seahawks for a minute? But he's been in that building. He's been in that building. So it's really not a new structure for the front office. And that always worries me when you've struggled that much and you kind of change regimes, but you keep a guy that already has a relationship with the ownership.
Yeah. He was with the Seahawks, by the way.
Greg, I look at Caleb Williams and the weapons that he's going to have over there with Chicago, right? You got Allen, you got Moore, Rome, Swift at the running back spot. And it looks like he's set up for success, but there's something about the Chicago Bears that just doesn't allow me to buy in completely to them changing things over there. What do you think the chances are that these guys have a winning record this year? I've seen articles saying that they should have a winning record. And how fast do you think Caleb will adjust to the NFL game?
I'm with you. I have looked smarter than they usually do by fading the Bears year after year after year because their fan base gets so excited in the offseason, and I never trust it. And that goes to ownership. That goes to their structure. I do think they have the best structure they've had in a long time with Ryan Poles, their GM. The concern would be to me that their defensive improvement late last year doesn't stick. They don't have a great pass rush, defensive play. You know, it tends to be a little up and down in general. Eberflus, to me, is not like an exciting head coach. And so I think you look at what could be the best division in football. That to me is the route that I would question, that they could still end up as a 7-8 win team because of the defense, because of the schedule. But I like Shane Waldron. I don't know how you guys feel about him, and I love the offensive talent there. So that part of it, I think, will work. It's just whether it works to make them a great team right now. No, I would put the Packers and Lions ahead of them still.
Yeah, we liked Shane Waldron just fine when he was here. And the view that everyone had on him when he was here was he came into a tough situation where there was already kind of a tumultuous marriage. So I was really surprised to see Jaxon Smith-Njigba with that now infamous hesitation when he's talking about Waldron. Like, it's just people here have hated offensive coordinators before. Daryl Bevel got a lot of shots, Schottenheimer, but Waldron wasn't really the recipient of a ton of criticism so much as part of a bigger problem with the team. I actually have a similar question to Bump, but about Washington. The Commanders made a ton of moves in free agency that I liked, a ton of moves in the draft that I liked, but then you show me the logo and I go, oh, well, wait a minute, like, how's this going to work out? I don't know that I trust this team implicitly. How did you see their offseason, and do you see them as kind of pushing to be a contender?
It made sense to me the way they just added so many players in free agency. I think that's a good route to do on your first year for Adam Peters, who comes over from San Francisco. So, look, I trust the ownership more implicitly because they're, you know, taking over for the worst ownership in professional sports. So it's just got to be an upgrade. And I trust the GM situation because I think that's an upgrade. I think it's going to take time. Like, that's not a great division. I have major questions about the Cowboys. I think the Giants might be one of the worst teams in the NFL, so there's opportunity there. But they are probably a year away. Jaden Daniels is a guy who is used to great pass protection, and that is their number one concern going into this season, is their offensive line does not look good on paper. Maybe a bottom five offensive line.
Gut feeling. What did the Seahawks do this year? 9 wins last year, didn't make the playoffs. What are you seeing? What are you feeling? There's a lot of change here. Talk to me, Greg. Tell me something good.
I am always going to be a Geno optimist, and I am optimistic about Grubbs. I'm excited. I think the continuity with the weapons is excellent, and overall talent's excellent. And I believe in McDonald, and I think the 49ers come back to the pack a little. So I'm going up. Let's go up one win. I think 10 is fair. I think this is a good team, and I don't think this is going to be a division that has like a 13-win team. I think the Rams, 49ers, and Seahawks are all going to be maybe more tightly bunched than the Vegas odds would say in terms of Seattle.
He is Greg Rosenthal of NFL Network. Thanks so much, Greg. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
Great talking to you guys.
Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game. With former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
Stacey, first down to you. What are two things that stood out from Byron Murphy's introductory press conference yesterday?
The first was Byron talking about how height questions came up during the draft process.
It came up, but, you know, I ain't worrying about that. You know, I believe in heart over height, and also, too, you know, that don't matter when you're on the field, you know. That don't matter at all. I'll let go out the window. It's either you're a dog or you're not.
Heart over height, great line that I'm going to start using regularly as a petite. However, I think that those questions make sense. They were also questions that faced Aaron Donald and why he, quote, slipped just a little bit to end up being taken by the Rams, still a mid-first-round pick. John Schneider was careful when he made the comparison between Aaron Donald and Byron Murphy to say, I'm not saying he's Aaron Donald. I'm not saying he's as talented. I'm not saying that's what he's going to be. I'm not predicting that he's going to get all these Pro Bowls and All-Pros. What I'm saying is both guys have similar builds, and because of their build, but also a combination of their strength and explosiveness, it just turns into great leverage. Like, it's not quite this tweener who, you know, ends up being, you know, not ideally a fit for any spot. He can be an amazing three tech. Like, he can, you know what I mean? Like, he can still do these things. So it is interesting to hear other teams were concerned about it, but that the Seahawks saw it and compared it to one of the greatest to ever do it. I just thought it was it might have been an interesting draft process for him. The other one that stood out was what he wants to improve on.
I feel like I need to improve on pass rushing, you know, and finishing on a quarterback. You know, obviously I know I can pass rush very well, but I feel like, you know, there's something I need to get better at. Just my game period, you know, I feel like there's always room for improvement in every area, you know, every aspect of the game. But yeah, pass rushing, also finishing on the quarterback. You know, I had a lot of missed ops this year. Just getting back there, you know, hit him with a great move, but I get back there, I slip and fall, you know, reaching. So really just working on pass rushing, finishing on the quarterback.
Credit to Byron Murphy for pointing out that he wants to be elite at something he's already really good at. He was legitimately one of the best pass rushers in this class. And it was a strength of his at Texas. They were the number three defense against the run. T'Vondre Sweat, a big part of that. Byron Murphy was really the better pass rusher of the two. And that's where he was really elite among these defensive linemen that were in this class. So I was impressed that he pointed to an area where everyone thought, oh, he's a great pass rusher, and said, I want to get better.
Second down. Stacey, what's something interesting that you have noticed about current and former Seahawks tight ends?
If I were to ask you guys if the Seahawks have had a great tight end, an elite tight end in the last 15 years, you'd probably say, Zach Miller was cool. Like, I really liked him. I mean, Jimmy Graham was elite and then came here and couldn't find quite the same success. Well,
greatest
guess what?
In franchise history.
Yeah, exactly. Well, guess what?
Did nothing wrong.
The top four paid tight ends in this past free agency class, all Seahawks or former Seahawks. Noah Fant, the highest paid tight end in the offseason. He re-signed with Seattle on 2 years, $21 million, 10.5 average per year. Colby Parkinson with the Rams on 3 years, 22.5. Gerald Everett, former Seahawk, with the Bears, 2 years and 12. And Will Disley, 3 years and $14 million with the Chargers. There is a market that found a lot of value in what the Seahawks had at tight end. Even though the Seahawks have had like up and down luck with the position itself, I feel at times they've been underutilized and overpaid. You gave up a first round pick and more for, you know, Jimmy Graham, and then couldn't find a way to use him. But even then, he has the most single season receiving yards of any tight end you've ever had. I mean, it's just been such an interesting position for Seattle. If you tap into it, it can be an amazing weapon. I just don't know that Seattle's done that yet, so I was surprised to see these numbers.
I'll be interested to see how Ryan Grubb utilizes tight ends, because I think a lot of how Seattle used their tight ends under Pete Carroll was by design, was a Pete thing. I don't think it was what Waldron or Bevel or Schottenheimer, I don't know if it was what those guys specifically wanted to do offensively, but I do kind of wonder what Noah Fant's going to look like in this offense, because if you recall, Fant, while with the Denver Broncos, was one of their leading pass catchers during his first, two seasons in the NFL before coming over here to Seattle. So I wonder if he's going to kind of fill that role, maybe. I mean, you've got three great wide receivers, so I don't know how many footballs are going to be able to, you know, go around the yard this season, but I kind of wonder what Fant's going to look like in Grubb's offense. Third down. Stacey, what's something the Seahawks will have in next year's draft that they have not had since 2017?
Two compensatory picks. This is from NFL.com's Lance Zierlein. Seattle's left with compensation for Damian Lewis and Jordan Brooks in the fourth and fifth rounds, respectively. They didn't end up getting picks for Parkinson, Wagner, or Locke, which is fine because you can get a max of four, and they got two. That's really solid. But how have they not had compensatory picks since then? This feels like something that, like, I should know and I should be able to immediately recall, but that number surprised me. 2017.
8 years?
Eight years
as of next year since the last compensatory pick. Meanwhile, you see the 49ers every year getting, like, three, four. And that is due in part to some of the guys that have gotten promoted throughout the league, that program the NFL has. But, like, this is how you get more bites of the apple.
Yeah.
Is loading up on these compensatory picks. I think the Seahawks then would have, nine picks in the draft?
Yeah,
next
way
year?
Too early look at 2025. The conclusion to this third down is that 2025's draft is looking pretty good for Seattle. We just have to wait a year to see it.
Fourth down. Stacey, we had Maurice Jones-Drew on to start the second hour of today's show. Really fun interview with him. What stood out to you from our interview with MJD?
That the Rams would have taken Byron Murphy if Seattle didn't. And you can't just look at it and say, well, that's what you think, Maurice. MJD does color commentary for the Rams. He's well connected with that organization. He knows about their needs. He knows about that front office. I'm sure that there are many rumors he heard about who they wanted to go after and who they were interested in. Now, he personally told us that he wouldn't have loved the fit because Byron Murphy would have been stepping into a very, very big shadow cast by Aaron Donald. And it would have been like setting a rookie up for failure in a way, because no matter what, you're just not going to be that good immediately. It's just not going to happen. But I do think it's encouraging when you hear that a team that has been to a Super Bowl more recently than you, won a Super Bowl more recently than you, given you headaches regularly, wanted the guy that you got. Who doesn't love taking someone? You know what I mean? Like, this team wanted that guy and you got him. Like, if I heard that Kyle Shanahan, if I heard Kyle Shanahan was eyeing a wide receiver and really wanted that wide receiver and, you know,
you gotta go snatch him up.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh great, what'd this very smart coach see with this person? So I liked hearing that. It was validating.
Yeah, it definitely was. MJD.
That was a great interview.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun. Especially his stuff about playing against the Huskies.
Yeah, if you guys did not hear the interview, it will kick off hour two of the podcast, which is uploaded an hour after our show, so at around 3 p.m. And if you subscribe to the podcast, it'll be automatically downloaded to your phone, so go make sure you do that. But
rate, review, and subscribe.
Rate, review, subscribe, 5 stars. But hour two starts with our interview with Maurice Jones-Drew, and at the end of that interview, so about 15 minutes in, 13 minutes in, Curtis asks him about that amazing game he had versus Washington.
322 yards.
And Maurice Jones-Drew told us a story.
That involves Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah. It was a really good story. I laughed out loud, literally. But he was very gracious with his time for that.
He was. I felt bad because Bump was the one who set that interview up.
I know.
He contacted. I feel like there's a group chat of like former Pac-10, Pac-12 football players that like they're all a part of, because we had Joey Harrington on the show yesterday too. I wonder like who else is in that. Is like Matt Leinart in that?
Well, and he was group Bump chat? Was part of that charity golf event with like Reggie Bush.
Yeah. Right.
This is like when you hear any of our former players that are hosts, or excuse me, that are analysts. So like when you have like Wyman, Bump, Brock, they'll just mention offhand, like, so I was talking to this person. You're like, what?
Like, how do you know that person?
Like, the fact like, that Dave Wyman, like, knows John Elway.
Shannon Sharp, too.
It blows my mind.
Yeah.
Wait, of course he does. But, Wyman, like, the casualness with which they'll drop those names.
I believe Wyman co-owned a racehorse with John Elway once upon a time.
That is the most insane rich people thing I've ever. That's amazing. Wyman's so well connected.
He is.
And he doesn't brag about it.
No, he doesn't.
He'll just kind of, that's my friend Shannon. It's amazing. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Curtis Rogers in for Michael Bumpus today. So we're going to talk about some returning pieces on the Seahawks offense. We also are hearing that Mike McDonald is going to speak after Seahawks rookie practice today. If he appears at the podium during our segment, we're going to throw you there live so you can hear from the head coach. All that coming your way next.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
We are taking you out live to Seahawks rookie camp, where head coach Mike McDonald is speaking to reporters now.
As an evaluation guy, how excited are you looking forward? Are you looking forward to looking at the film today, just seeing what happened?
Oh, I'm juiced. Anytime we're doing football, I'm excited. You know, it's it's the best part of the job for sure. So, but just to see it come together and see the guys move and compare that to what you expected on tape, to what, you know, versus what's actually showed up, will be a lot of fun.
With the coaching staff, we talked to you kind of early on about building the staff and how you're bringing in all these different people, different ideas.
Yeah.
How, now that you're to this point of being on the field, just how's the process been of getting to know each other, knowing football with each other, and then seeing it translate? Just how's that process overall?
Yeah, this is the next step of it, but it's really exciting. I think we got an awesome staff, a lot of different talents people are bringing to the table, different experiences. And we're leaning on those things, you know, and trying to figure out what's best for us and at all times. And we're not going to waste good ideas, for sure.
We didn't get to see you as a coordinator in Baltimore. Were you kind of a real vocal, get involved in everything kind of guy? And were you
take a guess. No, I mean, it's as needed, you know. But, like, my personality right now, observational mode. As we get going, you see things, you'll address them. And, you know, we're coaching everybody all the time. But yeah, it's just fun to see football being done. But we want to do it the right way. We want to do it up to our standard. So, you know, we'll address those things. But when we're cooking, I mean, let's not get in the guy's way. Let him go play football.
You mentioned observing. Anything catch your eye in particular today out there? Seeing a guy move a certain way, anything that kind
of? I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, I thought our offensive operation was pretty dang good for the first day at rookie camp. I mean, there's some hiccups in there. But defensively, I think they settled down just once they realized, hey, we're just practicing football. you know, I think you saw the execution go up, and there's a lot of cool things, but really excited about the guys we brought in. And it's fun to see our coaches coach, you know, for real for the first time.
Tagovailoa is obviously a pretty big name. How did you guys get involved with him, I guess, and getting him out of there for this?
You know, I'm not sure the actual details of it, but I'm excited he's here, and he had a good first day, it looked like.
As long as Schneider's been in here before, they've always kind of taken pride in developing undrafted guys, giving those guys a shot. Just how's your view always been in your coaching past?
Yeah, we're very much aligned with that. Take a lot of pride in the UDFA process. Doesn't matter. I told the guys last night, it doesn't matter where you start. You know, everyone's got an equal opportunity. There's levels to it. You know, in draft picks, there's a little different levels, but that's something we take a lot of pride in developing our guys. But like I said, if you're going to be here, we're coaching you. You know, just like you're on one of the 90, and you know, just like we would, you know, roster spots 1 through 5. So, yeah, absolutely, we're excited about those guys for sure. AJ has a little hammy that nothing major. Will be, you know, be out a couple days, if that. But we're just, you know, playing it safe right now.
Did you have music in Baltimore?
Yeah, we did. Probably not as much as we'll have here. You know, we'll kick it up a little bit, but trying to find the right balance.
Did you have anything, Bob?
No, that was it.
The music? The music or AJ? Both of them? Okay.
Both my okay. Two questions.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Great. Thanks, guys. Great.
All right, that was head coach Mike McDonald. What was the tweet that you just saw, Curtis, about music? Because people were wondering, like, what all is changing from Pete Carroll's.
McDonald just said that they will still continue to play music at practice.
Yeah, so everyone chill out.
Yeah. Not everything is changing, okay?
All right.
Stand down.
That was Mike McDonald speaking from rookie camp. Let's take a look at the team as a whole, though. The other thing that we wanted to make sure we talk about here is whether we're overlooking the amount of talent coming back to the Seahawks offense. If you guys remember, Greg Rosenthal, who opened up our 1 p.m. hour, said, you know what? I'm really excited to see what this defense looks like with fresh eyes. But, man, this offense is returning a lot of guys, and that usually does lend itself to success. And he's right. You look at the Bills, who aren't going to have Stephon Diggs. You look at the Vikings, who are entering life with a brand new quarterback. Maybe J.J. McCarthy wins the job from Darnold and it works out. Maybe he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You look at a couple other teams that have lost major offensive contributors. The Seahawks aren't one of those teams. I know that they lost Damian Lewis. I know they lost their center. I understand that they're moving on from D.J. Dallas, the latter of whom went to the Cardinals. But you've still got Geno. You've got your top receivers. You've got your top running backs. You've got your two tackles. That is a lot to return.
It is, and a lot of those guys are at a stage in their career where I think you can expect them to kind of take a step forward in their production. Charles Cross is entering year 3, which is always a pivotal year in anybody's career. You don't really have the benefit of saying, like, oh, I'm new to this game or I'm new to this league. Like, you're already in year 3. So I would expect him to hopefully take even more steps forward. Jackson Smith and Jigba, his second year, he really improved in the second half of last season, so I would expect him to improve in year 2. Zach Charbonnet is going to hopefully be out there more in his second season. Abe Lucas, you're hoping that he's out on the field more because he missed a ton of games last year. But a lot of these guys are in a spot where, like, you can expect them to make improvements and to get better. It's not guys who are in, you know, year 8, year 9, year 10. It's guys that are at a stage in their career where they're really entering their primes.
Yeah.
And I think the offense should do well with Ryan Grubb as offensive coordinator.
I was going to say, I'm glad that you mentioned Ryan Grubb, because you could hear this argument and then make the case of, well, it doesn't matter if they have guys coming back. Everyone's in this new system. Isn't that a disadvantage? Now, the system may be fantastic. Like, we'll see what the scheme looks like. Everything could be great. I think that there is something to be said, though, for just chemistry and experience. And look, I'm sure we will inevitably talk about quarterback as a position, whether or not Sam Howell really impresses in the preseason, something like that. But the reason that I still point to Geno is just that familiarity with players. Now, maybe Sam wins the job. Maybe everyone loves Sam. But even in a new system, even with a new coordinator, even with a new head coach, it is still important that a lot of these guys are coming back together.
Right. And continuity matters everywhere on a football team. And the fact that there is not just a big overhaul, you know, bringing in new guys all over the place, like, I think that's going to be a big benefit to this coaching staff. I think that's probably a big reason why McDonald wanted to take the job here in Seattle, is because he's a defensive guy, probably didn't want to have to build up both sides of the ball. I think the defense obviously here is going to need much more elbow grease to get it working properly than the offense. Now, the offense has had its warts over the last couple of years. Shane Waldron, a lot of times the Seahawks would get off to a really fast start. They'd score on their opening drive. They'd score on their second drive of the game. And then they'd have this big span in the middle of the games where they would not score. And then they'd probably score on their final drive of the game. I would love to see this group score more consistently throughout the game rather than just holding on for dear life after scoring early on or playing catch up at the very end of games.
All right, get your questions in for What I Need to Know. We're wrapping up the show and wrapping up our week by answering your biggest questions. I already have one about MLB. We could use fun ones too. I don't know. Send in any
question.
It's a
Friday. Yeah.
It's a Friday. Let's get crazy. Send in any question you have to the Mac and Jack's text line. That number is 866-979-3776. Curtis Rogers in for Michael Bumpus today, answering your questions for What I Need to Know. It's coming your way next.
The John Schneider Show
with Wyman and Bob.
Byron Murphy falls to you guys at 16.
For one reason or another, I personally think it's like divine that you're focused on one individual, and he felt like the guy all the time. You know, we weren't in a position to go get somebody, but I would say that if we would have had that ammunition to do that, that was somebody that everybody had the consensus. He was probably the primary, well, he was obviously the primary guy on defense to go get.
Hear the rest of this interview on demand at seattlesports.com and on the Seattle Sports YouTube page.
Do you have a car you're thinking of selling? You want to get the most money for it, but you probably don't want to deal with the hassle of selling it yourself because that's annoying. Meeting a stranger in a grocery store parking lot after work so they can test drive your car and negotiate on a price? No, thank you. So here's why you should sell your vehicle to my friends at Wayscar Ford in Auburn. They have a program that pays top dollar for your vehicle up front, and it gets even better. Because when Wayscar Ford resells your old car, they split the profit 50-50 with you. Why? The money they save on auction buy fees, transportation costs, and travel expenses allows them to offer this program. They'd much rather split that money with you, the customer, rather than those outside services. But are they going to offer you less? It's a fair question. I see it all the time, but no. In fact, they encourage you to shop and compare, but in virtually every case, Wayscar Ford has been able to match or beat competitor offers. So if you're looking to sell your car, make sure you do it at Wayscar Ford in Auburn and get paid twice for it.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by Cookies Country Chicken. Curtis Rogers in for Michael Bumpus today on this beautiful Friday. Get your questions into the Mac and Jack's text line. 866-979-3776. I love these questions. What I need to know, should the Mariners bring Marlowe or Ryan Bliss up to platoon with Haniger or to play shortstop and move more to the outfield?
I was surprised that Cade Marlowe was not the pick to be promoted when they promoted Jonathan Clase a few weeks ago. But, yeah, I don't know. I think Ryan Bliss is in a good spot in AAA. I don't think he's going to get the call-up super soon, so... yeah, I'll be interested to see if Haggerty starts hitting or if he doesn't, what they do with that kind of extra outfielder spot. But, yeah, Marlowe came up last year and had some really good at-bats. He had that grand slam against the Angels.
Mm-hmm.
Would be interesting to see
how his
bat plays.
What I need to know, my wife came home from her year one job at a high school and said one of her coworkers called her his, quote, work wife.
Hmm.
Should this be no big deal, or did Reggie find a new job? I'll speak as the woman in this situation. I personally don't like when people say that. And it's not like that's sexist. I've never thought it was sexist.
It's weird.
It's just uncomfortable. Like, it's... Work relationships should be professional, platonic, obviously. But, like, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I personally don't. Now, also, it's complicated when you're like, I have a boyfriend. If someone's married, if I was someone else's wife, I'd be like, why are you calling? I don't know. Maybe I just think it's weird.
It is a little weird, especially because if you don't kind of reciprocate that, you know, kind of funny relationship that you might have with that person, then it's kind of like, I am not your work wife. Now, Matt Nelson, who is not here.
Yeah, it's on vacation.
My wife likes to joke that he is my work wife.
And that's great.
And he plays along with it. It's true.
Yeah.
Matt, I think I see Matt Nelson more than I see anybody outside of, like, Bump. Because Bump and I,
football season,
we see each other 6 days a week during football season.
That's exhausting. I'm just kidding. We love you, Bump. What I need to know, what did Curtis do when potential? So you mentioned earlier, we were talking about Pat Bev and how you treat people that you see as beneath you. Like, that's what really matters. And you mentioned, booking guests, and sometimes because they just think, like, oh, this is just a guy from a local talk station reaching out, that they might be jerks. So Jen in Beaverton says, what I need to know, what did you do when potential guests, like, yelled at you? And how dare they?
So the one time that sticks out to me when it happened is...
Are you going to say the name?
Should I?
Is it a huge name?
It's not a huge name. I'll give you the sport.
Okay.
Hockey.
Okay.
So it was... I called this guest... And they were under the assumption that I had asked for the following day, which would have been a Saturday, and no one's here on a Saturday. And I was like, no, I went through...
Double check.
Yeah,
like,
I went through
I'm right.
PR. They said it was today, and they're like, no, it's not. It's for tomorrow. And I was like... Buddy, if you don't want me to call right now, like, I will hang this phone up. Like, and he was like, I'll do the interview. And I was like,
we'll do it live.
I was like, okay, dude, I'll say his name. Ray Ferraro with ESPN. Dude's a jerk.
I wanted you to say his name.
Absolute jerk.
There you go, Curtis. What I need to know is Curtis having a hearty breakfast along with his WWE backlash
Ray
tomorrow
Ferraro's
morning.
Ray Ferraro's up there with Greg Olson.
You said his name one time, and then you're like, I'm going to keep going. Ray Ferraro.
Dude's a jerk.
Wow, that is tough.
He's like their top color commentator, too, on their NHL coverage.
Oh, my God.
I will never have him back on. We
that's
had him
so
on
rude.
One time, and I was like, yep, never
Can
getting
I balance
this, guy
this out and say, you know what guest I've always loved us having on? John Buchagrass.
Oh, love
Coolest
him.
Dude on the planet. Like, I do want to balance it out, but there are many media personalities that are amazing.
Yeah, every time I have asked John Buchagrass to come on, he's like, oh, would love to do it.
I love him.
Tell Stacey I said hi.
I love him so much.
Yeah, he's a great, great guest to have.
Oh, your WWE Backlash. Are you watching? What's WWE Backlash?
It's a pay-per-view, which will be on Peacock.
Oh, fascinating.
I'm sure I'll find time for it tomorrow.
What?
It'll be at 9 a.m. tomorrow, and I'm unfortunately going to be working here, but the second I'm off, I'm going straight
Wyatt.
Home and
Wyatt,
watching
my Wyatt,
man.
I should have known.
Did we just become best friends?
I think we just became best friends.
What I need to know. Who has a better NFL career, Byron Murphy or Dallas Turner?
Who can say it?
I wish
point?
I knew. Yeah. Hopefully Byron Murphy. Byron Murphy.
Exactly. Or maybe the Seahawks trade for Dallas Turner at some point.
You know, that would be a very Seahawks thing to do.
Yeah.
Let's see what I need to know. Because we're cool people, we have birthday parties for our dogs. Stacy, you share a birthday with one of our dogs, Meaty Pablo. What should the theme of his birthday party be?
Wow.
Okay, do you want to hear my suggestion and tell me if you think I should do something else? We talked about Pat Bev getting upset that Pacers fans were yelling Cancun on three. I think the party theme should be Cancun.
I love it.
Like, they got kicked out of the NBA playoffs. Everyone's on vacation.
People are wearing, I mean, it's not Hawaii, but I feel like a Hawaiian shirt would work in Cancun.
It's Cancun, and everyone has to wear the jerseys of teams that have been eliminated from the NBA playoffs.
Bucks, you got Suns,
yeah,
Lakers.
Everyone has
that'd be
to,
great.
Yeah, you can have a Pat Bev jersey.
People
and be like,
are
we're
sipping
all here
on.
In Cancun.
People are sipping out of like tiki cups and stuff.
Yeah,
that seems like a fun. That'd be an incredible dog birthday.
Oh, someone said Game of Bones, a Game of Thrones theme. Oh, that's so much more clever than mine. But mine's sports. What I need to know. How cold is too cold to wear shorts? I got some blowback from weather wimps at the Mariners game Tuesday night.
I would say anything under 60 degrees.
Yeah.
You're going to have to keep the bottom portion of your legs bundled up. Anything above 60, I think shorts are fine. If that's how you vibe. Did you see the forecast for next weekend?
Yeah,
that's a shorts
you read
weekend.
It to me. Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, maybe not for me.
Mid-70s to low 80s. Not this weekend.
I need
it
85.
Before
but
you
then
put
not
shorts
a,
on?
Not a degree warmer than that.
I don't know, Stacey. I've heard you complain out at Seahawks camp when it's like 75
Curtis,
about how hot
is there
it
something
gets.
I haven't complained about? Name me one thing I have not complained about at some point.
You are the LeBron James
truly,
of complaining.
What I need to know, how much Riz does Rick Riz have?
Infinite.
What I need to know, who emerges as the Seahawks defensive leader? That's a good question.
Clint Hurt, when he was here, loved Uchenna Nwosu.
I was going to say Uchenna.
Like, he spoke so highly of Uchenna Nwosu. I don't know if I've ever heard a coach speak that glowingly about a player. And it seems like Uchenna is kind of on board with McDonald. He had the quote.
Those comments that were kind of controversial.
Yeah, where he was kind of like, yeah, I love
A clean slate.
Clean slate, fresh start. I think this is going to be a big help. And yeah, I think Uchenna can be that guy for sure. I wonder who wears the green dot. It's probably going to be like probably Jerome Baker is my guess.
Yeah. Curtis, let's talk Sebi Zavala.
Okay.
From the 253, what do you do if Zavala continues to be an almost automatic out at the plate when he's in the game?
I wonder if you have a conversation with Mitch Garver and say, hey, I know we brought you here to DH. Can you maybe catch once a week or at least be available off the bench? We nearly saw Garver catch on Wednesday because the Mariners had pinch hit for Zavala, I want to say in the ninth inning, and they had the tying run up. And so if that game went into extra innings, Cal Raleigh was the DH that day.
So Garver's
back to being a
catcher.
If Garver probably gets in the game. I will say, though, I walked by the tunnel on Wednesday because I was looking for a player to interview.
Yeah, Bump and I were watching you.
Yeah. Like, what's
like
that guy
Hawks.
Doing down there? Saw three sets of catcher's gear. One said Cal Raleigh, one said Sebi Zavala, one said Mitch Garver. So he's got gear.
Yeah. He's ready to go in.
He's ready to go if you need him to.
All right, you guys. Well, I'm also ready to go. So let's get out of here. Curtis Rogers filling in for Bump today. Always fun when we get a host. We're excited, though, to have Bump back on Monday. For Curtis Rogers, Wyatt. Shout out, Wyatt. Thanks for
holding
helping out today.
Thanks for having me, y'all.
I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming up next.